I'm Austin.
I'm Bridget.
And I'm Lauren. And this is Tipsy Ghouls, a podcast that searches your neck of the woods for the stories that keep you up at night about true crime, conspiracies, and you guessed it, ghosts.
So without further ado, let's get started.
I am now recording.
Hi.
Hello. I am recording as well.
Great.
I am also recording.
With the star of Apple TikTok, Bridget Snyder.
Apple TikTok.
Oh, thank you.
I just saw your tweet on my, tweet. What? I just saw your TikTok on my For You page of your jeans.
Yeah, I made one TikTok of giant jeans that I found.
I read
all the apple shaped girls are following me now. And boys.
I read through the comments and the one girl that was like, hey, just wanted to let you know that there's a password or something on there. And
I
you're
know.
Like, yeah, it's not a big deal.
Yes, I know. I'm like, this is a very old notebook. It's probably to like my Tumblr account or something stupid like that.
Something that doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah. And there was like some random number and it was like, I think that's her social security number. I was like, bitch, it's not. Do you think I'm that fucking stupid? Like, thank you, but no. But yeah, I guess I am the new star. Watch out, Charlie D'Amelio. I can't wait to exploit this for our podcast.
Right.
But welcome.
Yes, hello.
To Montana.
Hi, glad you're here. This episode is all about Hannah Montana.
Yes. What if my conspiracy was about Hannah Montana?
how that bitch got away with wearing a cheap blonde wig for 8 years and no one noticed for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Or if I set it up like there's a mysterious pop star that no one has ever discovered the identity of.
Okay.
Her name, Hannah Montana.
Alexis Texas.
Alexis Texas. Oh my god. But yeah, it's been 2 weeks since we've recorded. Some stuff, personal things happen, but we're back. And
better than ever.
More excited. Yes, more excited to record than ever.
Yes.
Yes.
This is like the only time that the three of us actually get to sit down and talk to each other. So it's like
we Right, for real. Cherish this time.
Yeah, exactly.
Someday we'll be all together in person to do it.
Yes. Someday. This is why Hopefully. You need to go leave a review on Apple Podcasts so we can get the fuck out of our
We
jobs.
Actually did
bitches.
Get a new review. Did you guys see it?
We did?
Uh-huh. Did we?
That's so exciting. Oh my
we
goodness.
Did. I'll read it quickly.
Okay.
Yes. While you're there, I have some ASMR.
Ready? Do it.
Wow. Oh, here we go.
Beautiful.
This is from
Thank you.
The title is Gabe.
Okay.
Thank you, Gabe.
And there are 5 stars. It says, who wants sober ghosts? I like mine drunk. With 3 exclamation points.
That's
Thanks.
So Great. Cute.
Thanks, Gabe.
Thanks, Gabe.
That's adorable.
You're a real peach.
Wow. We should make shirts with that on it.
I know. That's what I'm saying. And exclamation points and all.
Gabe. From Gabe. That's so cute. Oh my God. I love that.
Well, it's been 2 whole weeks since we've seen each other, so there's a lot to talk about.
I know. And the debates are tonight. So
as we speak, they are warming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not watching.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I know who I'm voting for, so I don't need to watch.
Yeah.
True. If they're painful, I might turn them off, but I...
Yeah, I'm going to start it, see where it goes.
Yes.
Dip my toes in a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yes. so fun. I love it.
Okay, let's not talk about politics anymore. I'm over it. I don't want to see
anything. Yeah, literally anything else.
Good.
So my best friend is having her a joint bachelor and bachelorette party before they get married.
That's fun.
And I
sounds about right.
Booked a amazing cabin in Hocking Hills for it last night.
Nice.
Wow. Oh my god.
This thing. Exciting. I mean, it's gonna be in January, so it'll be cold as fuck. But we have a hot tub. There is a game room.
Wow.
A bar in the basement, like a pool table. There's 5 bedrooms, and it was only $1,500 for the whole weekend, which is not even bad.
Wow.
Because you don't That's have to really leave good. At all.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll just need like food and alcohol.
Right.
There you go.
Wow.
So I'm super excited. So that's what I've been doing.
That'll be fun.
I'm pumped.
Yeah, you've spent the past 3 weekends in Canton. I feel like I haven't seen you in forever.
I know. I feel like I've just been like in a Canton cocoon.
Yeah. A Canton cocoon.
A Cancun.
A Cancun. Sounds about
looks
right.
It's like Idris is getting like drunk, blurry Snapchats and like pictures on Instagram.
Yeah, this past Snap story was pretty bad. It was it was not cute, but it was funny.
There was one from Alyssa that had you in the background going, "What did you say, Jakey? You're so funny."
And Jason like, oh went, wait. Yeah. Yeah, that was
so funny.
Jake was being hilarious, though. He was so funny.
I saw him straddling that heater. That was like the only picture that I really saw.
He is from LA. What do you expect? It was like 60 degrees out, and he's like, I'm so cold.
Oh my god, I'm sure.
Me now. I can empathize, Jake.
Yeah, everyone's in shorts. Like, what do you mean?
I was like, it's beautiful. This is the perfect weather.
Yeah. Finally not sweating for once outside.
Right, literally. And the weather this week is only supposed to be that. Like 60
we're
degrees.
We're supposed to get a cold front here. And
how
I'm
cold,
like,
though?
It's supposed to get down into the 50s.
Oh, that's cold.
Wow.
I'm low-key ready for it. I'm going to dress up. I'm going to bundle myself up and wear some winter clothing.
Sweater.
I had like a sweater on and that like rust jacket that I showed you guys. I got from
H&M. Yeah.
Yes.
Here I am. Yeah. What have you guys been up to?
Just working a lot.
TikTok fame.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Bridget's TikTok famous.
Yes.
Oh, I got featured on my company's website.
Really?
Recently.
That's cool.
Loud. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. That was loud.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
What was it
so
for?
That was fun. National Talk Like a Pirate Day. That's right.
Fun.
Your boy is a pirate celebrity. Yeah.
What's your That's best so pirate
impression.
Yeah, thanks. Oh god, my brain's not working.
Okay, so hear me out. Everybody always thinks like they think like the ahoy mateys type pirate, but me being the idiot that I am, the pirate persona that I created, because we can have two pirate personas. Mm-hmm. You can either be an angry pirate or an idiot pirate. So both of my pirates are old.
Okay.
But the idiot pirate is just like done with everything and he's drank one too many bottles of rum. And then the mean pirate is just a grumpy old man. So like my persona and how I talk like him is like impression. An old man. My impression. I kept trying to say interpretation.
Why are we having the hardest time with that word?
It's because we haven't done this in 2 weeks, and our minds are
Can
like,
you tell we're rusty.
What is it to podcast? So like when I am a pirate, I'd be an old man. I'd be like, "You kids get off my lawn," like that, like an old man. I don't know what you're talking about. I haven't seen the rum in years.
That's funny. When you said he's drank one too many bottles of rum and he doesn't know what's going on, it's like, so just you normally? Or all of us, actually.
So me on a regular basis. Yeah. Why is the rum gone? Where yeah. did it go? And then everybody's like, Austin, you drank it? I'm like, oh, I did.
Shit.
Oh, shit. Literal verbatim for me. Yeah. Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. It's funny.
That's cute that you guys can have different personas. That's a really fun idea.
I know. Such creativity. I know.
Such creativity. Much creative.
Yes. Much so, create.
You know how we've been talking about synchronicities for the past like 2 months, right? Mm-hmm. And it's mostly mm-hmm. been in numbers. So recently, the newest trend has been me seeing 11-11 to 11-12. Like that transition between the numbers.
Interesting.
And I just saw it happen on my recording.
Interesting. Weird.
Yeah. I haven't looked that's up wild. What like that means, but that's been the latest trend in my synchronicities.
Hmm. Wow. I haven't been seeing 11s recently. Hmm. But that is weird though. I used to see the transition from 11 to 12 sometimes, but I couldn't tell if I was just looking for it or not.
This has been pretty consistent, so I don't know what to think of it.
Yeah.
Mm. Interesting. I'm sure it's something. Yeah. Are you drinking the Sam Adams Oktoberfest?
I am drinking the Sam Adams Oktoberfest. Thank you for asking.
You need to try the Sam Adams
Jacko.
It is so good.
So that's actually what I was looking for yesterday when I bought this beer, because I wanted more of that specifically, but they didn't have any in my Target. Ooh,
I'm going to send you. Okay. So two Sundays ago, like I told you guys, we were testing out a bunch of different drinks for my friend's wedding, for Alyssa and Jake's wedding?
No. Mm-hmm.
So they have two dogs. One's name is Malu and one's name is Pumpkin. And at the reception, they're going to do like themed drinks for them.
Okay.
So they're doing a Malu Mosa. So it's just gonna be just like a mimosa. And then they were gonna do like a pumpkin bourbon smash, but they said they tried the recipe and it was disgusting. But they also don't like bourbon, so I don't trust them. It was actually probably really good.
Yes. Probably.
But so Jake went to the store on Sunday and he just made us like four or five, like literally six drinks to try. And he made one called pumpkin, oh my gosh, what is it called? Oh, it is so good, but they didn't like it because they're like it tastes like bourbon, and I'm like, I literally taste zero bourbon in here.
Like, well, yeah,
pumpkin beer bourbon in it. Right. Pumpkin beer and bourbon apple cider cocktail.
Ooh, that sounds really good.
It has bourbon, lemon juice, apple cider, pumpkin beer, and we use the Jacko and like an apple slice for garnish. It was so good. It was
so next time I come up there, we're making that, right?
Yes, we'll make a whole gallon.
Great.
I don't care if it's like the middle of July by the time you make it. We're drinking that. I don't care. We will find pumpkin beer somewhere.
Yes, we will. I'll just keep some in my fridge.
Yeah. Perfect.
That sounds so good.
That sounds really good.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It was super, super good. I'm kind of sad that they didn't land on that, but I mean, bourbon at a reception, maybe not.
I had like six or seven old fashions at my cousin's wedding, and y'all know what happened there.
Last
weekend I was at home and we were drinking champagne, just like we had one bottle that we drank.
Wow.
My family.
Okay.
I know. And afterwards I was like, I still kind of want to drink. It was like Friday or Saturday, and they had what sounded good was Bailey's, but then I found Bailey's in Kahlua. And I was like, actually, a White Russian sounds really good. Mm. But what if I just mix Bailey's and Kahlua? That's pretty much a White Russian. And so I drank two of those. It was probably more than I just kind of measured. eyeballed it into a glass and promptly passed out. So woke up at 2 a.m. like, wow. What the fuck happened? I drank a lot of it. It's like, this looks like, it was probably like this much was one, like with ice, but
wow.
That's a lot. It was just alcohol and like a splash of milk.
Wow. I love that for you.
It was a good time.
I love Thank that you. Journey for you.
Yes, I love yes, it.
It was great. It was wonderful.
You know what else is great?
What? Tell us.
Celebrating the good things that happen to us in our life.
Yes, that is great. We need that right now.
We do. I know, especially in such trying times.
I know. Yeah.
These are troubling times in the kingdom.
Like, I usually love politics, and I literally don't want to hear anything about them. Like,
yeah, it's
I'm
exhausting
over it
right now.
I know. Yeah.
But I'll go first. But I got to think of something first. My something good is that. Oh, here we go. So I ordered a gallon water bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
This bitch is fucking huge.
Wow, that is huge. Holy
and
cow.
And heavy as fuck.
Oh my God.
And so I've been, obviously I'm not on track today, but you know, over the weekend when I was drinking copious amounts, I finished one whole thing and I did not wake up on Sunday hungover. So.
Wow. Interesting.
Now I just need some liquid IV.
So now you're one of those girls now. You're like, I just need to drink my water. Just let me drink my water.
Actually, so don't hate me for this. Okay, so I've been working out like 5 days a week, going to Orange Theory at 7:30 in the morning every day, which is very impressive for me.
Wow.
Who am I? And they have little pouches that you can buy for this that will you can carry around your shoulder like a little like a little
I'm
purse.
Oh my god.
And I want one so bad. I could be a little gym bro.
Hold on. I need to take a drink of my water. Oh my god, has anybody seen my water bottle?
I need to catch up. How could you
Has anybody seen my water bottle?
Has anyone seen my gallon jug?
Drank
has
in
anybody
20
seen
minutes.
My gallon
it's,
jug?
It's pink and it's massive. I know you've seen it. Susan, did you take my water bottle?
My God, I said don't touch my water God. Bottle. I need to drink.
Yeah, don't take a drink. It'll mess up my amount. I need to drink by 1 o'clock.
So
tomorrow's hydration starts today, you know?
So in summation, I am now a gym bro. So
that's completely fun.
Also, I've been to two spin classes in the past 2 weeks, and neither of them have played Ariana Grande, so.
That's ridiculous.
I'm pissed.
That's the only reason to go to a spin class.
I feel
class.
Like every class should play Ariana Grande.
Yes.
I've never been to a spin class because I can't afford anything like that, but that is rude for you.
I used to sneak in with Emily when she paid for classes. I just got a guest pass that I just like scanned quickly and ran in.
Yeah. I just pay like a $20 drop-in fee. Yeah. But I go with Alyssa and she has a membership, so.
They're super fun.
They are really
like,
fun.
Ma'am, that guest pass is expired. And you're like, sorry, I can't hear you.
Sorry, what? I got to go to my class.
It's going to start. The class is going to start.
I have my AirPod in. I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah, just keep walking. Just don't even say anything.
Well, when I had the pass on my phone, it was supposed to be like a week or whatever for LA Fitness, and something happened that like it didn't activate, but it did. So I just like used it for probably 6 months.
Oh, shit.
No one ever questioned me. And I was like, they were calling me like, do you want to activate your guest pass? And I was like, hang up. I don't know what's happening.
Wrong number. Sorry.
Yeah. What? But you mean it's not activated yet, like, but I'm getting in?
Beach, do you want to elaborate on your something good? Because that's pretty good.
Tell us something good.
I know. I'm really excited. So, referencing earlier, I had a TikTok. I make TikToks just like because I want to rant to myself. I really never expected anyone to see any of them. and most of them had like 100 plays of that. It's just me ranting. And, I made this one. Actually, it was I sent you guys Snapchats of these pants that I bought.
Yes.
And
yeah, I died laughing.
I was cackling.
I have been trying to find like slouchy mom jeans, and online shopping obviously is just a wreck because the measurements for pants are never right, especially in the plus size section. Like, they're just like, I guess, general ideas of how big they are. And I was ordering from ASOS, which I don't normally order from, and it said that I wore a 22, which is not right. That's not my size. That's like four sizes too big. But the measurements were right, so I ordered them, and they are these humongous pants. And like,
they look like clown pants.
They did.
I know. And like, not that anyone that wore that size is humongous. It was just comical that like, measuring them, they were like 12 inches off what the measurements said for that specific pair of pants. And so I made a TikTok about it, and it has 475,000 plays, and I'm still getting followers from it. It has 87,000 likes, and now I have 1,700 followers.
Which
isn't that many, but it's exciting.
I mean, yeah.
And I can go live now, which is fun. Wow. I'm going to do that. But the ability is there if we ever want to.
They said achievement unlocked.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. But I feel like it's a sign because we've been looking for like something, you know, obviously we've been trying to promote our podcast on social media. And I feel like TikTok is hard when you don't have a following. But as soon as like it sees that, oh, people like your videos, I feel like it puts more people into your, you know, like shows your videos to more people. So I definitely have plans to exploit the shit out of it for our podcast. So,
oh yeah.
If you're listening to us 2 years from now, just listening back on some old episodes, and you know us from TikTok, this is where it all started.
You heard it here
Thanks
first.
Thanks for being a G.
Yeah.
Yes. But I'm very excited. It was a fun. I was like trying to work, but was very distracted by
the fame.
Like, every time I logged on, the notification said 99 plus, and it's like, oh my god,
hell yeah, that's such like,
hell yeah,
so much dopamine.
I know, it's too much for me. It's too much dopamine.
I haven't been this happy in years.
Exactly. I'm like, I'm going to crash so hard soon. When I texted you guys, because I was like, I don't know what to do with all the dopamine. It's like, I don't know what's happening. Look what's happening.
I'm feeling happy. My heart is growing three sizes.
Exactly. You're like, don't forget about us. I was like, hell fucking no. This is all of us. I'm doing this for us.
I'm doing this for us.
But yeah, it's been a happy thing.
Yeah. It's been a hell of a ride.
Yes. So if you see me on your For You page, don't be alarmed.
Don't be alarmed.
Austin, what's your something good?
Well, mine's not as good as your guys's, but I found $50 on the ground yesterday.
And that's pretty good.
Like, tried to like wait it out and see if anybody was looking for it. And then no one was really looking for it, so I took it and I bought groceries with it because,
hell yeah.
Adulthood. And then also, my roommate got this really expensive bonsai tree and she killed it. It started dying when she first bought it, so I took it and started taking care of it, and it was doing pretty okay. And then she took it back, and then it was basically dead. So she was like, you can have it if you want. So I've been taking care of it, and there's some pretty solid growth on it again.
Wow. Okay.
It just shows you. It just shows you the product of care and quality that I give to others. This is my this is now my advertisement to let you know that I can keep 18 plants alive and care for them with the kindness and respect that they deserve. Wow. And I'm single. Thank you.
Yes,
exactly. You should become a plant doctor. Like, come to people's houses and fix their plants.
I have friends now that are like, hey, what's happening with my plant? And I'll like look at it and I'll be like, too much water.
That's always it. Too much or not enough.
too much sunlight.
Yeah.
Wow. I need your services. Maybe you just found a calling.
Yeah, really.
I love my plants, and I can tell when they're not doing well. I have a couple of plants that aren't doing super great, and I know that it's because they're getting too big for their pot, but I haven't been able to go buy a bigger pot for them yet.
That's okay. They'll
yes.
hang on.
Ah, yes. Yes.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
I thought I saved my fiddly fig that had root rot. I did exactly what it said, pull out, wash all the dirt off the roots, trim all the rotted roots. I put root protector in there, got draining soil, like cactus soil, and it's just slowly coming back. So it's not looking good, but I might try to propagate the top of it, because I guess you can clip off the green part and propagate it. So I think I'm going to do that, because I have some of that rooting powder.
Make it a new boy. Some of that plant cocaine.
Yes, plant cocaine. Lauren, remember when I gave you that, that rooting powder in a bag?
Yeah, it looked like straight cocaine.
You got that plant cocaine?
Like a very fine cocaine.
The finest plant-based powder ever. You know it, I know it.
It's just rooting powder.
Please, sir. We all know it. And he tests it, and he's like, oh, it is.
Yeah. It is literally rooting powder. what kind of weird street drug is this? It's for my plants.
Try it, sir. You'll love salts. It.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm happy for your plants and you too, Mr. Plant Daddy.
Plant Daddy.
Obviously, we are not sober ghosts. We are drunk ghosts or ghouls or whatever Gabe likes. Thank you, Gabe. So, Lauren, what are you sipping on this week?
So, I'm not going to lie. I wasn't planning on drinking this week, but then I hopped on here and I was like, I'm going to do it.
When duty calls.
So.
Do it for the pod.
Do it for Gabe.
Honestly. I'm drinking this 1924 double. Hold on. I need a light. Read it by candlelight.
Yeah, you're sitting in that darkness. Look at this. Hold on. Hold
on. You are literally reading my candlelight. All
right. I've joined you now.
I'll fall asleep if I do that.
You got to get the ambiance.
Okay. Ambiance. I've had my candles lit for 3 hours. The spookiest podcast. All right. Tell us about your bevy.
It is
your beveragino.
It is a red wine blend, double black, from 1924. I don't know what any of that means, but the ambiance on this is pretty spooky, and my company sells it, so, obviously. It's just 1924, the heart of the Prohibition era and wine's darkest hour when it was deemed illegal. It was also the year of our winery first planted vineyards in California and farmed grapes that were sold to friends and neighbors. Okay, so cool. Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, I don't usually do red blends because they're too sweet for me, but this one's.
Yeah.
This one's pretty good. Because it's still a dry blend. So, recommend.
Give me that cab.
Same.
Wine's
darkest. Bone dry. Bone dry.
That sounds good. I love that you're reading it by candlelight.
Yeah.
That's how I will be doing all of my reading from now on.
Yes. And welcome to tonight's reading.
Austin, what are you drinking?
Well, I last episode was drinking my Stuck in My Glory Days Yingling. Mm-hmm. Today I have graduated to 27-year-old fresh businessman, got his first big boy job, and I'm drinking Sam Adams Oktoberfest.
Ooh.
Yum.
It's pretty good.
That is that's you go out, you have your first salary paycheck, and you're like, I'm not drinking a domestic. Well, I guess it's a domestic still, kind of.
Yeah.
But I want a cool domestic.
No, not a plain domestic.
Yeah, I'm not getting Miller PBR Light. Tonight. I'm getting Sam Adams.
Exactly.
But I went out trying to find the Jacko. I keep wanting to call it Jackio. The Jacko from Sam Adams, because it is Latits.
So
but My Target, my local Target, was all out. So Target, if you're listening to this, step your pussy up because you were out.
Step your pussy up. Own a business.
Get a job.
Oh my God, it's funny. Yeah, come on, Target. Step your pussy up.
Okay. Beach, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a beer from Land Grant that I've had in my fridge for a while. Mm. It is called Quadrahopic IPA. It says, in your hands is an immersive, oh, I can't read in the dark, immersive lupular experience of the senses. Four hop varieties, hop, 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 and hop, harmonize in perfect balance, bringing forward a dank crescendo of orange, mango, pineapple, papaya, and lime.
Who wrote that description? They said, someone they said,
very high.
Make it Easter, but make it hood.
Wow.
Yes. It was a dank crescendo.
And then they said, hop, like hop, hop, hop.
I know. But it's in a cool rainbow can. So I think that's why I bought it. But it's pretty good. It's definitely hoppy. And it does have like a mango flavor, which Lauren learned from a local.
Oh, yeah.
I will never reveal my sources.
Yes, yeah. Well, I just did. Fuck. I can believe that. a mystery brewer that sometimes I get nervous on airplanes. No. Sometimes the mango flavor is actually just a cover up for them overheating it. Yes. When you overheat it, it tastes like mango. So they're like, we definitely made a mango beer. Mm-hmm. But apparently it's not.
Sometimes. Next time I drink a mango beer, sometimes it's not.
Sometimes
it's not. Now, is this one supposed to be mango? Who's to say? I don't know.
We'll never
know.
It
just tastes like a beer.
Wow.
Well, we love a good beer. You know what else we love?
What?
Fun facts.
Yeah, we do.
We do.
I've got those yes. Hannah Montana fun facts for you.
Woo!
Just kidding. It's regular fun facts about the state of Montana. Oh, I wish we could use that transition into fun facts this week. Damn. Oh, well.
Wow.
Anywho, so my first fun fact is Giant Springs, Montana is home to the largest freshwater spring in the U.S.
I want Look to go that. To there.
Wow. Oh, I want to go to every national park that Same. Exists.
Mm-hmm.
Montana holds the world record for the greatest temperature change in 24 hours. On January 14th through 15th of 1972, the temperature went from negative 54 degrees. Wait for it. To 49 degrees.
Oh, my God,
that is
making it
wild.
A whopping 103 degree difference.
Wow.
Global
giving
warming.
Ohio a run for their money.
Can you right. imagine negative 54 degrees? Holy, that's cold as fuck.
Midwesterners would still be like, it wouldn't be so bad if for the it wind. Just wasn't windy.
Oh my God.
It's just the wind All that the gets you.
It's just the wind. Now living in Florida, it wouldn't be so bad if it weren't so humid.
Yeah.
It's the humidity that gets you. It's
humidity, yeah. The selection of Helena as the capital of Montana had an inauspicious beginning. A political war between two copper kings, Marcus Daly and William Clark, resulted in massive bribery and vote-buying scandals only a copper king could afford. With Daly backing Anaconda and Clark supporting Helena. It is estimated that in 1894, each man spent almost $3 million to determine which city would become Montana's new capital. I don't know about you, but I don't give a shit what city's the capital. So,
yeah.
Right.
Not for that much money.
No.
Anaconda, Montana, that's kind of dope.
Okay, but think about it. Hear me out. 46 out of Montana's 56 counties are considered frontier counties with an average population of 6 or fewer people per square mile.
That sounds like heaven.
Wow.
Yeah, right? Jordan is one of the most isolated county seats in the country. The town is 175 miles from the nearest airport, 85 miles from the nearest bus line, and 115 miles from the nearest train.
God damn.
Wow.
Isolation.
That's kind of scary.
That is super scary.
In Montana, you can use the word ditch to order a drink. The phrase means with water, i.e. a whiskey ditch is...
That's
a whiskey and water.
Is that weird?
Yeah, that is
give
weird.
Give me Tito's whiskey ditch, please.
But Tito's also, ditch. Who orders something, a whiskey with water?
You're my whiskey some and people. My water.
I used to have some people have order like, I want a whiskey neat, but I want two ice cubes on the side. Like,
ew.
Very specific.
Ice cubes on the side? What?
Yeah. Like, they wanted, like, specifically one cube or weird. Something like that. Just to, like, cut it a little bit.
Interesting.
Very weird.
Remember that one time that Wright State was supposed to have the presidential debate? Yeah. And then they canceled it? That made me really sad.
Me too.
Especially because they blew all their money on it and
never
recovered.
Yep. Yeah.
Well...
fun.
Yep.
You missed
sorry,
a couple
it's just
fun
getting
facts.
Ready to
did
start.
You did you mean to skip
oh,
the small
I did
ones?
Not. I did not. Let me go back. It's
I
just...
didn't even notice. I was reading my story.
So sure the other good. Fun facts that I accidentally missed. At Egg Mountain near Shoto Dinosaur wait, what? Near Chateau
like, that's the name of the town.
Chateau
Dinosaur Eggs.
It's literally at it's Egg Mountain near Chateau. Listen, hold on. I'm going to read this verbatim, everyone. Okay. At Egg Mountain near Chateau Dinosaur Eggs have been found discovered supporting the theory some dinosaurs were more like mammals and birds than like reptiles.
Wow. No punctuation at all.
No punctuation at all.
Like a little kid telling a story. Chateau Dinosaur Eggs supported the fact that they're mammals.
Well.
Also, I'm scared in the dark. I'm going to turn the light back on.
The last one that I skipped was the Going to the Sun Road in Glacier Park is considered one of the most scenic drives in America. And someday I would like to go to there.
Oh, my God. Look at
the
this.
Going.
Look at it.
Oh,
wow. That's
yeah, that's pretty. I'm turning my light back on too. I can't.
That's beautiful.
Oh wow!
I could see the darkness behind me in the camera, and I got scared.
Wow,
that's gorgeous.
That is beautiful.
Holy cow! You know what? Okay,
it's wild
hold on.
That
I have a bone to pick with someone live on air, not on one of you guys, but I have to just say this.
Okay,
somebody told me that they didn't think that I was a nature person, and I didn't like going on hikes, and that's why they never asked me to go to nature that's things with him. I was like, I literally go hiking all the time, and I have so many plants, and I love nature. And if you don't know that about me, then you don't know me.
Yeah, they obviously don't. Know anything about you.
I was like, I'm very offended. Yeah, I was like, I literally raised freaking farm animals and went in the deep woods of Ohio every chance I got, okay?
Right.
Yeah. Don't judge a book by its cover. That's the lesson.
Okay. Sorry about that rant.
Oh, you're good.
But it is now time for us to talk about our stories for tonight.
Yeah.
And starting us off is Lauren with murder.
It is
Lauren
me.
Lauren with the murder.
Take it away, Lauren.
All right. Okay. My sources for this week are Morbidology, KHQ.com, NikkiKincaid.com, and a document by Daniel Bandman that I got from NikkiKincaid.com. Okay. Wayne Nance was born on October 8th, 1955 in Missoula, Montana, a city nestled in the northern Rocky Mountains. His mother worked as a waitress and his dad was a trucker. They lived in a mobile home in the eastern Missoula area and he graduated from Sentinel High School in 1974. Throughout school, he easily got A's and B's in his classes. However, he got a reputation for being a bit of a hothead and a troublemaker. Even though Nance was a little bit odd, he was still really well-liked around town and seemed pretty normal by all accounts. In February of 1974, five-year-old Siobhan... Is that how you say that name?
I think it's like Siobhan or...
It's something... S-I-O-S-I-O-B-H-A-N. Isn't it pronounced something differently?
Yeah, let me figure
it out. I'm trying to find it right now.
Siobhan.
Okay.
Siobhan.
Anyways. Yeah,
it's a feminine Irish name.
I love it.
Siobhan. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In February of 1974, five-year-old Siobhan McGinnis, super Irish name, was walking home from playing with one of her neighbor friends, but she never came home. She was reported missing that day, and 2 days later, her body was found in East Missoula. She had been raped, murdered, and dumped on the side of the road. This was the first murder to retroactively possibly be connected to Wayne Nance. On April of 1974, Donna Pounds was home alone. Her husband, Harvey, the deacon of the Bethel Baptist Church, was at work, and their three children were either at school or work. Donna was an extremely religious woman who worked at a local Christian bookstore. A man broke into their house carrying a .22 caliber Luger and attacked Donna in the bedroom. He tied her up, spread eagle on her bed with a clothesline he had brought with him, and raped her.
No.
Afterward, he forced her into the basement and shot her in the back of the head 5 times.
No.
So, police immediately started to look for suspects. Neighbors reported seeing a man who looked like Nance around the home at the time of the murder. And considering that Nance was friends with the Pounds' three children, he was a regular at the house and knew exactly where the gun was hidden. Mm-hmm. When the police arrived at his house to question him, he claimed he was in bed sleeping all day because he didn't feel well.
I'm sure.
Police received and executed a search warrant of his house and found a pair of blood-stained women's underwear that had been washed. The blood was confirmed to be human, but the DNA was never tested. I'm not sure if there was a lack of a sample since it was washed or what, but also it was the 70s, so... There wasn't a whole lot of DNA science back then. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nance was obviously the police's number one suspect other than Harvey, because I guess it had come out that he was having an affair, but there was no physical evidence to point towards Wayne Nance, so he was never charged and the case went ice cold. In 1979, a decomposed body was found off of I-90 in Missoula. She had been sexually assaulted and stabbed to death. She was white and wore a flower print dress. She became known as Betty Beavertail. In September of 1985, Christy Crystal Creek was found with a gunshot wound to the head. So these are all Jane Does. And December of 1985, Debbie Deer Creek was found in a shallow grave on Deer Creek with a gunshot to the head. In 1984, so the year before all of this, Nance began his job as a bouncer at the Cabin Bar in East Missoula. In 1985, there was a drifter who was only known as Robin. She was later identified as Marcella Sherry, is her nickname, Bachman. She was connected to Nance via friendship after having arrived in Missoula in an attempt to escape a family dispute. Nance claimed she left town in 1984 and was never seen again. The following year, on the 12th of December 1985, Mike and Teresa Shook and their three young children had just finished up their dinner when they heard a violent knock on their front door. When Mike opened the door, a man lunged at him with a butcher knife, stabbing him to death. Teresa was dragged to the bedroom where she was tied up, raped, and stabbed to death. Afterwards, the man set the house on fire, hoping to conceal evidence. But actually, the three children escaped unharmed. Meanwhile, Nance had gotten himself a job at Conlin's Furniture, where he worked as a delivery driver. His store manager, Chris Wells, was like the object of his affection. He loved her. He knew she was married, but he had a huge crush on her. One night in September of 1986, Chris and her husband Doug were returning home. It was around midnight when Doug thought he spotted somebody lurking outside their home. He went to inspect, and sure enough, he found Wayne Nance in the bushes. He explained to Doug that he had been driving past when he thought he saw somebody looking into their window. Nance asked Doug to go inside and get a flashlight for them to investigate further. However, when Doug turned his back, Wayne Nance struck him on the back of the head with a gun. Doug fell to the floor and started bleeding everywhere. The two men struggled as Chris rushed to see what the commotion was all about. Nance pointed the gun at her and forced her to tie her husband's hands and feet before Nance tied hers. With Doug and Chris bound, Nance took Chris to the bedroom and tied her to the bed. Nance then turned his attention back on Doug. With his hands and feet tied, he forced Doug down to the basement. Nance tied Doug's neck to a pole before getting out his 8-inch butcher knife. Nance plunged the knife into Doug's chest, missing his heart by centimeters.
What?
Believing that Doug was dead, Nance went back upstairs and headed towards the bedroom where he had Chris tied up. But Doug was not dead. Despite the beating and the stab wound to the chest, Doug was still alive and conscious. He managed to free himself from the binds and retrieved his Savage 250 rifle. He went up the stairs, confronted Nance, shot him once in the side, and Nance dropped to the ground. As Nance attempted to get back up, Doug began to batter him with the rifle. He continued to do so until Nance stopped moving and his head was a bloody mess. Both Nance and Doug were rushed to the hospital. Nance died of his injuries, but miraculously, Doug survived. Wow. So, after this, authorities discovered that this crime was not an isolated incident. Wayne Nance was linked to 6 different murders.
Wow.
In his home, police discovered a photograph of him with Marcy Bachman. When Marcy was 16 years old, she went missing from Vancouver, leaving behind a family who had no clue about her fate. And in 2006, DNA testing showed that the woman known as Debbie Deer Creek was, in fact, Marcy Bachman. Furthermore, turns out that the woman who Nance was friends with, named Robin, was Marcy. So, these three girls were the same person.
What?
Wow.
So,
like, he kidnapped her. They were friends.
No, she went to escape her family to Missoula. They met. They, I guess, started dating. He killed her. And she ended up being this Jane Doe.
Oh, wow. That is wild.
Yeah. In 2009, Betty Beavertail was identified as 14-year-old Devonna Nelson, a runaway who had been hitchhiking through Missoula from Seattle. Christy Crystal Creek still remains unidentified, but it's presumed that she, too, was a victim of Nance. And it will most likely never be known how many victims fell prey to Wayne Nance. However, he will go down in history as one of the only serial killers to have ever been killed by one of his victims. That is a story of the Missoula Mauler.
Wow. How heroic for Doug to go save his wife.
I know.
Yeah. Wow.
So cool. I love what that story. I'm like, wow, what a fucking idiot. It's like, you literally can't even do that, yeah, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you got that close and didn't...
Fucked it up.
Complete it. Man. I will never understand, like... I mean, it's probably a good thing I don't understand, but why someone has the feeling of wanting to kill a person that they love.
I know.
Right?
I don't know.
Don't understand that.
Well, it's good that you don't understand.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'm like, I totally don't understand that.
So weird. That is crazy that someone would do that.
Whoa. Why? I don't understand. That was a really good one.
That was a really good one.
All right, Austin. Let's hear about what happens to people after they die and enter the next dimension.
Yes.
Well, do we want to talk about a white guy that thought he knew what he was doing and then got murdered?
Wow. Is that foreshadowing?
I love that.
Great. It is. So today I will be talking about the Battle of Little Bighorn and the Little Bighorn Battlefield. And for those of you who don't know, it is also known as Custer's Last Stand. Because the bitch died. So, with that being said, let's get started. My sources this week are Wikipedia, hauntedhouses.com, an article called Visitors of Another Kind by Bob Reese, seeksghost.com, and The History Channel.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. We went and we did some research. We stan a History Channel. Listen, your boy's got that degree. He's got to use it sometimes. So on June 25th, 1876, Native American forces led by Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull defeated the U.S. Army troops of General George Armstrong Custer in the Battle of Little Bighorn near southern Montana's Little Bighorn River. Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull, leaders of the Sioux tribe on the Great Plains, strongly resisted the mid-19th century efforts of the U.S. government to confine their people to reservations. In 1875, after gold was discovered in South Dakota's Black Hills, the U.S. Army ignored previous treaty agreements and invaded the region. This betrayal led many Sioux and Cheyenne tribesmen to leave their reservations and join Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse in Montana. By the late spring in 1876, more than 10,000 Native Americans had gathered in a camp along the Little Bighorn River, which they called the Greasy Grass, in defiance of the U.S. War Department order to return to their native reservations or risk being attacked. By June, three columns of U.S. soldiers lined up along the camp and prepared to march. A force of 1,200 Native Americans turned back the first column on June 17th. 5 days later, General Alfred Terry ordered Custer's 7th Cavalry to scout ahead for enemy troops. On the morning of June 25th, Custer drew near the camp and decided to press on ahead rather than wait for reinforcements. At high noon, Custer's 600 men entered the Little Bighorn Valley among the Native Americans. Word quickly spread of impending attack. The older Sitting Bull rallied the warriors and saw to the safety of the women and children, while Crazy Horse set off with a large force to meet the attackers head on. Despite Custer's desperate attempts to regroup his men, they were quickly overwhelmed. Custer and some 200 men in his battalion were attacked by as many as 3,000 Native Americans within an hour. Custer and every last one of his soldiers had died.
Oh, shit.
They got what they deserved.
Yeah.
So the Battle of Little Bighorn, also called Custer's Last Stand, marked the most decisive Native American victory and the worst U.S. Army defeat in the Long Plains Indian War. The gruesome fate of Custer and his men outraged many white Americans and confirmed their image of Native Americans as wild. Meanwhile, the U.S. government increased its efforts to subdue the tribes. Within 5 years, almost all of the Sioux and Cheyenne would be confined to reservations, which, as always, was shitty because it was the natives' land. And though this is a big piece of American history, many people believe that the massacre could have been prevented if General Custer would have listened to his scouts. Remember earlier when I told you that they were sent ahead to look and see if there were Native scouts? Mm-hmm. So they told him that they had been seen by hostile Indian scouts and that his usual tactics should be changed. Custer had too big of an ego and too much confidence to listen, and as a result, they all died.
Well,
So
I have a hard time feeling bad about that.
I really, yeah, I don't feel bad either. Like, he had it coming.
Yeah. Yes.
So now, being that this area is the site of so many murders, in addition to the cemetery that sits on the land, this place is scary. Here are all of the stories and personal accounts that I found on the internet about it. And there's quite a bit. So here's the bulk of my story this week.
I'm so ready.
So to begin, a visitor from New Orleans claimed to have been transported back in time to witness the battle. While driving along Battle Ridge, a cab driver from Minneapolis witnessed soldiers and warriors fighting to death. He came shaken and distraught into the visitor's center where the employees calmed him. Former battlefield park historian and superintendent Neil Mangum once received a strange call one day from a lady in Canada. She had a dream about an Indian killing a soldier during the Custer fight. She claimed to know the soldier's name. Neil checked the 7th Cavalry's roster but found no soldier listed under that name. However, the woman was persistent, stating that the records were incorrect. In August of 1987, on a moonless night, a psychic visited the battlefield from Colorado. Although she had never been to the battlefield and knew little about the battle, she provided details of action at Medicine Tail Ford and Nye Cartwright Ridge, standing beside the 7th Cavalry Monument and the mass grave of the soldiers dead, she felt the presence of restless spirits from the Custer Battalion. So while visiting the cemetery, the same psychic saw a spirit warrior, Count Coop, at a seasonal employee, then turn and ride past the visitor center down Cemetery Ridge. For those of you who don't know, which is probably everyone, counting coop is a Native Plains term for charging someone to show your strength and bravery. So the employee was resting with his eyes closed. As the warrior counted coop, the employee opened his eyes and said, "What was that?" So the psychic saw that happen. She saw more. And behind the seasonal homes, she saw 20 to 30 warriors coming late into battle. They were dressed in their finest, painted, and feathers pointed down from their heads. The question is, could she have seen a small group of young warriors who sacrificed their lives in the benefit of their people? These warriors entered the battle near completion, dressed to meet... Wow. Dressed to meet the everywhere spirit and have been referred to as the Suicide Boys. So there's actual evidence that they did exist.
Wow.
So here's some more specific stories that come from very specific places around the grounds. So the first one is Warriors on the Bluffs. Employees report many stories. Former Custer Battlefield Park Ranger Mardell Plainfeather experienced an encounter in 1980. Mardell is a member of the Crow tribe and still faithfully practices her people's ceremonies. She and her family regularly visited their sweat lodge and sat quietly in the thick timber along the Little Bighorn River across from the battlefield. Late one evening, Mardell and her daughter, Lorena, went to the sweat lodge to ensure that the fire was extinguished. This is a direct quote. It says, I don't make a habit of going out in the dark by myself, but I was in my car, so I wasn't scared of or anything. I had never had any supernatural experiences before, and I was certainly not prepared for one. But when I saw them, it didn't scare me at all. Oh. Mardell saw two Indian warriors sitting on their horses silhouetted upon the bluffs. The warriors were on the battlefield proper within the confines of the fence. They were dressed for war, painted, feathers placed along the flowing hair, while one wore braids. They carried shields, and one had a bow and arrow. One lifted himself from the saddle and looked down directly at Mardell, but she could not clearly see if the warriors Crow, Sioux, or Cheyenne, or if the warrior was Crow, Sioux, or Cheyenne. Another direct quote, she says, even if they were Sioux or Cheyenne spirits, they didn't mean me any harm at all. Perhaps they were just trying to tell me that the play, that what I was doing was a good job of interpreting the battle story to our visitors. Perhaps they were just trying to tell me that they were happy that a Native American, no matter what tribe, was finally telling their side of the story. Maybe their spirits were restless, end quote. Mardell had another experience that took place in her family's battleground house. One night in 1986, while the family was asleep, there came three loud knocks at her bedroom door. When the door was open, no one was there. Her husband Dan walked throughout the house, especially the kids' bedrooms, in fear that they might have been a burglar. The kids were safe and fast asleep. The direct quote from this is, the next day, my father-in-law said not to worry because it was only my husband's grandmother saying goodbye. She had died that night.
Wow.
So another big place on the property is the Stone House. And there's quite a bit of stories on here, but I kind of cut a few of them out because there was a lot. So one night in 1980, Mardell noticed the lights on in the Stone House. Not wanting to enter the Stone House by herself, she went to the apartment A to ask the ranger, Mike, to go with her. He offered to turn the lights off himself. His wife, Ruth, was watching an evening program on their new television. Mardell gave Mike the Stone House keys and she went home. Soon Mike returned the keys and related a strange incident to Mardell. While Mike was in the Stone House, Ruth noticed the television picture become blank. A voice came from the television exclaiming, second story. As Mike began walking up the stairs towards the upper level, Ruth was shaken when Mike returned, but he reassured her that nothing happened. Inside the Stone House, things have happened, however. A woman's figure has been seen coming down the stairs. Footsteps are heard upstairs when no one is there. During the summer season of 1986, a new battlefield ranger was housed for two nights in the upstairs apartment. He awoke the first night feeling someone sitting at the foot of his bed. He first thought it was his wife, but he remembered she was visiting family overseas and he was alone. As he reached for his Colt 45, laying on the nightstand, he saw a shadowy figure move from the foot of the bed. The ranger distinctly saw a torso of a soldier with the head and legs missing as the apparition disappeared into the other room. Spooky, spooky.
Wow. Sorry, my microphone was off, but I was just about to say, oh my god, that's really fucking spooky.
Yeah, apparitions is like the biggest thing that people encounter.
That's crazy.
Here. I just don't know. I just don't know about all that. So another big encounter is an incident where a woman was woken up in the middle of the night because of loud footsteps. In August 1997, just before the Stone House was closed for its conversion into the White Swan Memorial Library, four people spent the last night anyone would spend sleeping in the Stone House. Little did they know the visitors of another kind would bid farewell in the most remarkable way. One man slept in the upstairs apartment bedroom while a father and son shared the sleeper sofa in the apartment's living room. A young woman slept downstairs, and she specifically was awoken in the middle of the night hearing footsteps upstairs. She figured it was one of the guys heading to the bathroom. The footsteps exited the bedroom, went through the upstairs hall to the bathroom, then back again. No big deal. Then, moments later, more footsteps, but this time they were even louder. They became so forceful that she noticed shavings of paint falling from the edges of the downstairs windows. Her first thought was the person would wake up the whole house. She became very concerned as each new trip to the bathroom became louder and more forceful, almost vibrating the entire downstairs. Suddenly, the downstairs kitchen door slammed shut with a loud bang that vibrated the whole downstairs. She startled and jumped up. She knew it wasn't a gust of wind because all the windows had been well covered with heavy plastic and taped very secure during the renovation. It wasn't wind that slammed the door. It was something else, she said. The young woman immediately left the stone house and tried to sleep in her car. The next morning, she shared the experience with the other men that slept upstairs. All were perplexed because none of them heard footsteps banging around the apartment. However, the father, sleeping on the sleeper sofa, remembered being awoken by a loud bang from the downstairs around 2:30 a.m. It may have been the kitchen door slamming that awoke him. In attempts to recreate the effects of the footsteps, one of the men walked around upstairs while she and the other two listened from below. She kept yelling upstairs for the man to walk more forceful. He eventually reached the point where it sounded the way that she remembered. Everyone looked at each other when they realized the footsteps were so loud that no one upstairs could have slept through that, but they did. All right, I have a couple more for you. This one's a shorter one. This one is called A Shadow in the Visitor Center. On a summer's day in 1985, an association employee had an odd experience in the museum basement. He had just presented a program to the public and was returning some items to the audiovisual room. Before he reached the inventory storage room, he noticed a figure of a person standing in a dark corner. Although it appeared to him to be a soldier, he thought it was a fellow employee dressed as such to play a trick on him. He pretended not to see the soldier and walked past him. The employee turned left to enter the audio room. Then the employee noticed, out of the corner of his eye, the shadowy figure of the soldier moving into the hall. The apparition proceeded to walk through the locked door of the inventory room. Spooky. Mm. It said that he thought it was a joke, but nope. I disagree. Interesting. Yeah. And then here's my last one. So Christine Hope's story about apartment C was printed in Earl Murray's book Ghosts of the Old West. Hope had been employed under the SCA program during the summer and fall of 1983. The apartment was set up for in studio format so she could see the entire room from her bed. One early fall night, she awoke at around 2 a.m. Looking in the direction of the kitchen, Christine noticed a figure of a man sitting at the table. He had a long handlebar mustache. Hope glanced away, but he was still there when she looked back. Not only was he looking at her, but his face and eyes had the most ghostly, tortured, and painful expression. Though he was not speaking, Hope felt the visitor was attempting to convey the message that something very serious and tragic occurred here, and one should never make fun of it. The figure finally disappeared, and it took Hope some time before she was brave enough to turn the lights on that night. The next day, Tim and Christine visited the Reno Retreat Crossing. They climbed down the steep bluffs where Reno and his three companies retreated from the valley of Little Bighorn. After reaching the site of the crossing, Tim began to give Christine a detailed report of the action seen there on the day of the battle. They stood before a marker of Lieutenant Benjamin H. Hodgson of Company B, which rests alone on the east side of the river. While crossing the river, Hodgson had his leg shattered by a bullet that killed his horse. Falling in the river, Hodgson grabbed a stirrup of a passing horse that carried him to the opposite bank. Hodgson moved up the draw, but was cut down by an Indian bullet. Christine had been impressed with the story of Hodgson, so her curiosity led her to led the two to research more information on the officer. After returning to the museum, Christine read further about Hodgson. Tim located a photo, which he showed Christine. She was taken aback since it was the man she had seen the night before in her apartment.
Wow.
It was then that Christine told Tim of the events in apartment C. Hope slept with the lights on in apartment C for the rest of her duty. So if you're visiting the Little Bighorn battlefield, it is a surreal feeling, and considering the lives that were lost there, somewhat overwhelming. The spirits that linger are restless and very much active, and if you find yourself face to face with one, let me know how big his mustache is. And that's the story of the Little Bighorn battlefield.
Wow.
That was a long one.
Last one.
That was a really long one.
That was good, though. It seems extremely haunted, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, how could it not be? So much emotion and, like...
Right.
So much.
Oh.
It's just a pretty dark situation.
It is, all around.
And, like, high-key, Custer and his battalion got what they deserved, because...
Oh, for sure.
They shouldn't have been fucking around over there, but... All right, Beach, take us home.
Sounds good. My story is obviously conspiracy, but it has some murder involved.
My fave.
And it is, a little bit of an older, well, I guess not older than yours, but, it's a good one. So this is the story of Frank Little and the Pinkerton Agents.
Ooh.
So in the early 1900s, mining was one of the most popular jobs for men. It was also one of the most dangerous. Going miles beneath the earth while handling explosives was a risk that some men took to make a career for themselves and to support their families. We could only imagine the OSHA violations that would have been recorded back then, but the risk these men took daily just to make a living is unimaginable for us today. So many of the rights that we have as employees now were fought for by other working class citizens back in the early 1900s. The unionization and protest of workers for employee rights was a powerful movement, and with the support of the working man, of course, came resistance of the rich and powerful that were profiting off their labor. So Frank Little moved out west to be a miner in 1899 at the age of 19 or 20, not sure when his birthday was. He and his brother found success in the industry in California, the mining industry, and Frank later moved to Arizona. Frank was passionate about protecting rights of the working class and advocating for the safety of miners. He eventually became an organizer for the Western Federation of Miners in Arizona. His work in this group eventually led him to join the Industrial Workers of the World, or the IWW. The Industrial Workers of the World is still around today, has about 6,000 members, but in the early 1900s, it was booming. In the 1910s and early 1920s, the IWW achieved many of their short-term goals, particularly in the American West, and cut across union lines to organize workers in many industries. At their peak in August 1917, membership was more than 150,000, with active wings in the United States, Canada, and Australia. So Frank Little was passionate about the rights of the working man. He was involved in organizing lumberjacks, metal miners, migrant farm workers, and oil field workers into industrial unions. He even pioneered the passive resistance tactics that were later used by the Freedom Riders during the Civil Rights Movement. He took part in many historic free speech movements around this time. According to Wikipedia, he took part of the 1909 Missoula, Montana free speech fight, along with Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, helping organize lumber workers who suffered at the hands of logging company managers complicit with sharks or employment agencies who tricked working men out of their hard-earned money. Next, Frank Little took part in the Spokane, Washington free speech fight, where he was sentenced to 30 days in prison for reading the Declaration of Independence. I didn't look further into that situation, but probably interesting. Along with his organizer, brother Walter Frederick Little, and his sister-in-law, Emma Harper Little, Frank took part in free speech fights among workers in Fresno, California in 1910 and 1911. Little and several hundred workers were arrested for violating a city ordinance, congregating on city streets to publicly speak. Sound familiar? Many more workers belonging to the Industrial Workers of the World Union came to the city and struck in support. Eventually, Little successfully organized unskilled fruit workers in the San Joaquin Valley of California, a predecessor of Cesar Chavez's work. He also led free speech efforts in Kansas City, Missouri, Webb City, Missouri, Peoria, Illinois, and Butte, Montana, which is where our story comes from. And in Austin, in August 1913, having also some speaking problems.
It do be like that sometimes.
Oh no, your voice is low again.
It's okay.
Yeah, it is low again.
We're almost done.
It'll just be a little spooky voice. Because it's spooky season.
I'll just talk in a higher tone.
Okay. Perfect.
In August 1913, Little and fellow Industrial Workers of the World Union organizer James P. Cannon arrived in Duluth, Minnesota to support the strike of ore dock workers against the Great Northern Railway over dangerous working conditions. In the course of the strike, was kidnapped, held at gunpoint outside the city, and dramatically rescued by union supporters. So he lived a wild life, and he was making waves in the union world. And finally, in 1914, Little was elected a member of the Industrial Workers of the World's General Executive Board. So he's very well known in this space. Little was also a strong opponent of capitalism. After witnessing many late 19th and early 20th century American businessmen use unscrupulous methods to get rich. As a result, he also opposed World War I, which many believe to be a rich man's war and a poor man's fight. So he was very vocal about his beliefs. And while he was being noticed by the IWW and workers everywhere for his passion for protecting the common man, he was also being noticed by those who used cheap labor to get rich. And this is where the conspiracy comes in. So this story involves a private security guard and detective agency called Pinkerton. They were founded in 1850 and are actually still around today as a subsidiary of Securitas AB, which I guess is a Swedish company. But back in the early 1900s, they were more of a private law enforcement agency, kind of like legal hitmen, basically. During the labor strikes, businessmen would often hire the Pinkerton agency to infiltrate unions, keep strikers and suspected unionists out of factories, and recruit goon squads, which is just a group of people hired to intimidate the people from the inside of unions and workers in factories. And these weren't just passionate private citizens acting on their own accord. Pinkerton famously has worked with the government and the Department of Justice, and they are famously credited for stopping a possible assassination attempt of Abraham Lincoln, which is shady. And then after that, Pinkerton agents were hired as his personal security guard, and we all know how that ended up. So, seems a little sketchy to me. So, many people believe that Pinkerton agents were hired to take care of Frank Little, since he had been doing so much to unionize workers. And I'm going to tell the story of what happened to him. It is gory, so if you don't want to listen, you can skip ahead a little bit. In the early hours of August 1st, 1917, while Frank Little was staying in Butte, Montana, six masked men broke into the boarding house where Frank Little was staying. The men kicked in the door to Frank's room, or so they thought. To their surprise, they were confronted with Frank's neighbor, Nora Byrne. They claimed to be law officers and continued on their search for Frank. All according to Nora, he was still in his... I skipped a line. The men broke into Little's room and began to beat him. Then they abducted Frank, who was still in his underwear, stuffed him in a car, and sped away. They later tied him to the car's bumper and dragged him down the street over granite blocks, scraping off his kneecaps. They took him, They took him to Milwaukee Bridge at the edge of the town of Butte, where they hanged him. The coroner found that he did die of asphyxiation. They also found a hole punctured in his skull, which would later lead to some clues about his murder. A note with the words "first and last warning" was pinned to his thigh, referring to earlier vigilantes giving people three warnings to leave town before they took matters into their own hands. But apparently Frank was too powerful for a warning. The note also included the numbers 3777, which is a sign of vigilante activity in the 19th century in Virginia City, Montana, which I think I read that it's also involved in police somehow. Oh. I'm not really sure how, but yeah, like nowadays that number is like, I think I'll have to fact check myself, but I read that.
Or someone can fact check us and just email us to make it easier.
Yeah, just let us know. That'll be your homework. Some people thought this number referred to grave measurements also. And included on the note were the initials of other union leaders suggesting that they were next. And so for a refresher, if you don't know, vigilantes in this time were a group formed of private citizens to administer law and order where they considered governmental structures to be inadequate. So at first it was thought that it was done by just a random vigilante group who just thought he needed to die, until a man named Dashiell Hammett broke some news. So I think this is years later. I'm not exactly sure when he came out with this book, but Dashiell Hammett wrote in his book Red Harvest that in 1917 he was working as a strike breaker in Butte, employed by Pinkerton. He claims that someone inside the agency came to him and offered him a chance to kill Frank Little for $5,000. He turned down the offer, and that moment became a key to his life, according to one of his biographers. His biographer states that it's possible that the thought of one of Hammett's coworkers thinking he would want to or was even capable of murdering Little was enough to make him reevaluate how deep into Pinkerton he really was, and is believed that he felt guilty for even being considered at this, and this always haunted him. So, if Pinkerton agents really were out to assassinate Little, and it wasn't Hammett that did it, who was it? Well, after Little's death, union leaders saw his body and noticed the hole that was punctured in his skull. They insisted that this was a sign that Billy Oates, a notorious hired thug employed by Anaconda Copper Mining Company, which is a town in Montana from the Our Fun Facts, they hired him, I guess, sometimes to do their dirty work. And Oates had a steel hook for a hand that he had placed after his arm had to be amputated. And so that's the hole badass. In the back of his head, I know, it's like a movie. And so the hole in the back of his head was a clear connection, they thought, to Oates. So despite some of these connections being made, and even Little's neighbor living to tell the story of his kidnapping, no one was ever arrested or charged for his murder. But people still speculate what happened. 9 years later, two more men were named as possibly being involved, which makes this even more of a sticky situation. It was pointed out that Ed Morrissey, who had been Butte's chief of detectives at the time of the murder, had taken a 20-day leave of absence on the day following the killing. Allegedly, Morrissey had scratches on his face, and the autopsy of Little's body found that he had tried to fight off his assailants, and he had someone's skin under his fingernails. So if DNA testing was possible back then, I'm sure that would have been done, but obviously not. Is it possible that Ed took time off to heal the scratches? I wrote in there. Peter Prija was also identified as a possible member of the death squad, so they called it. Prija was at the time a motorcycle officer in the Butte Police Department, and like Oates, had worked as a security guard for the Anaconda Copper Mining Company. So even though there are all these connections to people that supposedly worked in true law enforcement with his murder, surprisingly or not surprisingly, no one was ever arrested. Hmm. So working men all over were heartbroken by the loss of Frank Little. According to Wikipedia, an estimated 10,000 workers lined the route of Frank Little's funeral procession, which was followed by 3,500 more. The funeral is still the largest ever in Butte history. Frank Little was buried in Butte's Mountain View Cemetery, and his grave marker reads, "Slain by capitalist interest for organizing and inspiring his fellow men."
Hmm.
Which is some badass shit.
That is.
So what's so eerie about the story, I think, is how similar it feels to what's happening now. Back then, the capital interests of the rich were protected by law enforcement, and anyone seen as a threat for empowering the common people were quickly taken care of. And this is just my opinion, the rest of it. This story is probably just one of the examples of something that happened often, and this one is just one that didn't get covered up well. The story might even possibly be used as an example of what not to do if someone was to take out someone for the interest of rich men. And I have a theory that this didn't stop happening. They just got a little sneakier.
Oh, yeah.
And that is the story of Frank Little's death in Butte,
Interesting.
Montana.
Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting how that tied into our fun facts.
Yeah. Funny how that happened.
Yes, I know. Yeah, when you said anaconda, I was like, oh.
My anaconda, don't.
But yeah, there's lots of more stuff about Pinkerton out there. So they're
interesting.
Kind of a sketchy agency.
Yeah. I think I've heard of them before. Like, vaguely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I had vaguely heard of it, too.
Yeah.
Damn. Damn, Montana. What you doing?
You wild.
I know. They got some crazy shit going on.
Just hearing that in your deep voice.
You wild. You wild.
Oh, did it fix? Wait, say something else. Did
Hello?
It it's normal again.
Did it stop?
No. Oh,
that's
no, it's
weird.
Not.
Okay,
never
no,
mind.
We're good. All right.
Interesting.
Yeah, if you're hearing Austin's
that's
deep
weird.
Voice, it's just something his computer does yeah. sometimes, so you're welcome.
Yep.
It's just a little something I like to throw in there sometimes.
Keep you on your
say,
toes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna say it even lower. I'm gonna say it in my lowest octave, yes. So it sounds even lower.
Okay, yeah, do it.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. Oh yeah. Does it sound good?
Oh my god, that was so low.
Is that the
oh
Kool-Aid
my
man?
God.
Oh yeah.
It sounds like, you know, those commercials that are supposed to be like slow motion and someone's like, oh
no.
Yes. That is hilarious. It. Oh my god.
All right.
Well, Lauren, where can you find us?
Wow, so many places.
They want to listen more.
So first and foremost, you can find us on Instagram. We are at Tipsy Ghouls Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Tipsy Ghouls Pod. You can find us on Apple Music and Spotify. And well, Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and basically anywhere else they're streaming. There is a link tree in our Instagram and Twitter that will take you to everywhere where we stream. What else? If you have any ghost stories, any true crime cases from your area that you want us to cover or you want us to talk about on the air, you can email us. We are tipsyghoulspodcast@gmail.com. Or even if you would just want to say hi, chit chat, whatever, doesn't matter. And please, 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 please leave us a 5-star review and a and write out a review on Apple Podcasts. That would be amazing.
Amazing.
And I think that might be it. Did I miss anything?
I think that's good. I think it covers it.
Wow, that was very quick.
Yes. Well,
it's like the fastest I've ever talked.
Are you? I know. Ooh, I have a good one for you. All right, here we go. Are you Westward Hoes ready to close this session?
Yes.
Westward Hoes.
Oh, great. Well, until next time, going into battle when you know you're outnumbered is definitely little dick energy.
And if you see a large man with a hook hand, probably run the other way. I don't care where you are, who you are. That's scary.
If you ever are confronted with a possible serial killer and he tries to kill you, kill him first.
Do it.
That easy.
That's it.
Right. It's that easy.
That's that on that. All
good
right.
Bye. Well,
goodbye.
Goodbye.
Fuck. Boop-ba-na-bum.
John Cena.
Sorry, I had to burp. I love that so much.
We love a petty queen.
Same.
Oh my god.
And that is the good story of the Missoula. Oh wait, what did they call him? Shit, I didn't write it down.